This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. And let's listen for a few seconds to President Obama, who said this morning he wants his Fed chairman to have another 4 years on the job.
The man next to me, Ben Bernanke, has led the Fed through one of the worst financial crises that this nation and the world has ever faced. As an expert on the causes of the Great Depression, I'm sure Ben never imagined that he would be part of a team responsible for preventing another. But because of his background, his temperament, his courage, and his creativity, that's exactly what he has helped to achieve.
That's the president speaking this morning at Martha's Vineyard. NPR's economics correspondent John Itzde is here in our studios. He joins us to explain what a second Bernanke term could mean if he is confirmed by the Senate. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
And I suppose we just heard from the president there the reason you'd give the man 4 more years because of the crisis he's been through.
Yeah, I think so. The president says he played a big role in pulling the economy back from what might have been another Great Depression, and he was forceful and creative in doing so. As the president also said this morning, Bernanke approached a financial system on the verge of collapse with calm and wisdom and with bold action and outside-the-box thinking that helped put the brakes on our economic freefall.
Isn't that outside-the-box thinking, though, as you put it, one of the reasons that Bernanke faces some criticism in Congress?
Well, it's true. He did some really remarkable things. First of all, he took interest rates right down to zero, but he went beyond that, lending money to financial institutions like Bear Stearns and AIG, who were collapsing and threatening the financial system. And then when credit froze up, Bernanke instituted a number of unique programs to support lending for businesses and student loans and real estate, a number of other things. These are things the Federal Reserve had not done before. He's rewritten the playbook for the Fed, and he's received some criticism in Congress for that, for going too far.
Going too far, meaning that he maybe should have done a little less, even in this crisis situation?
Well, yeah, there are certainly voices in Congress who think he has basically set the stage for a very difficult economic time, that we could end up with a big inflation as a result of the all of the stimulus that's been injected into the economy.
Well,
indeed, the Fed putting its hand deeply into the economy in ways like, telling Ken Lewis of Bank of America that it might be in his interest to actually go through with the deal to buy Merrill Lynch.
Well, let's talk about some of that, because you talked about inflation. Of course, one thing the Fed has done is just injected unbelievable amounts of cash into the economy, which is something that can create inflation. You create more money, you basically devalue it, you risk devaluing it, and you create inflation. If Bernanke is confirmed for 4 more years, he's the guy who would have to clean up after this. Is there any sense that he knows how he wants to do that?
You know, he's been pretty clear that he thinks he knows how to do it. And he has the tools to do it. Certainly, timing is the issue. He wants to pull the stimulus back before a big inflation starts. On the other hand, if he pulls it back too fast, we could end up with a double-dip recession.
So which has happened in other places when they've pulled back stimulus.
It's certainly happened in other places. And one of the real key tests will be coordinating with the rest of the world, because there's a lot of stimulus that's been put in by a lot of governments, and we'll need to coordinate it to get it back and keep the world economy going.
John, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
That's NPR economics correspondent John Itzde. The Cash for Clunkers program ended last night. This car trade-in program was designed to boost auto sales, get more energy-efficient vehicles on the roads, and also, incidentally, help struggling Detroit car companies. But the biggest beneficiaries, according to the government, were foreign makes. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports.
As of last Friday, 59% of the vehicles bought with Clunkers cash were foreign. The top two sellers, the Toyota Corolla and Honda Civic. The only Detroit vehicles in the top 10 were the Ford Focus and Escape. That's all from the Department of Transportation. Foreign firms control the majority of the U.S. market, but they did even better than usual in the Clunkers program. Carl Brower is the editor of Edmunds.com, the car consumer website. He says the reason is simple. The Clunker program favored gas economy, something Detroit is still working on.
They tend to make better trucks than they do fuel-efficient cars, and that's shifting. But right now, the imports still definitely have the advantage there.
Brower says if Congress had tried to tilt the program more towards Detroit,
then we'd have gotten into all sorts of trade issues with the program, and you'd have people yelling that it was slanted unfairly to benefit the domestic automakers.
That said, the program did help U.S. manufacturers. It cleared old inventory off dealer lots and recently encouraged General Motors to bring back more than 1,300 workers to build more cars. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
Some of the healthcare discussion focuses on healthcare for the most vulnerable, or some of the most vulnerable among us. Advocates for the homeless say that most people who lack shelter also lack medical insurance, and that puts a huge burden on the system. NPR's Pam Fessler reports.
Most homeless people are too poor to buy their own health coverage, but many also don't qualify for Medicaid, the government-run health program for the poor. Medicaid is mainly for people who have children or a disability, and most homeless people are childless adults. So like 63-year-old Walter Brooks of Baltimore, they make do.
How much do you weigh, please?
204 pounds.
Thank you. You can have a seat right here.
Brooks, a big, soft-spoken man, has been homeless on and off for the last 7 years. What health care he does receive, he gets at a clinic run by a nonprofit group, Healthcare for the Homeless. Brooks has high blood pressure, manic depression, and a history of strokes. So he's a little embarrassed when physician assistant Jean Priebus notes that he hasn't been in for a while.
Is anything bothering you that make you say, today is the day I need to go to the doctor?
No, I've been procrastinating about coming because I didn't want to get yelled at.
You don't get it. I just give you looks.
Yeah.
Priebus is concerned because Brooks's blood pressure is exceptionally high, and his lungs don't sound very good either.
Big breath. Out. Big breath.
This clinic sees about 200 homeless people each day at no cost to the clients. Many, like Brooks, have serious health problems and nowhere else to go, except maybe to an emergency room. Jeff Singer is president and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless of Maryland.
In 41 states, single adults are not eligible for Medicaid, and Maryland is one of those states. So you can have zero income and still not be eligible for any sort of health insurance.
He says that's true for about 70% of the patients Healthcare for the Homeless sees nationwide. The group uses donations and government grants to provide care, but Singer says that's not very efficient. He says a lot of people are homeless because they have health problems that cost them their jobs and eventually their housing, and that sets off a downward health spiral that's expensive and difficult to stop.
Because it's very, very harmful to your health to live outside, or even to stay in a shelter. Homelessness causes health problems, it exacerbates health problems, and it makes it very complicated to treat health problems.
So he and other advocates have been encouraged by the health care legislation now moving through Congress. The House-passed bill would expand Medicaid coverage for the first time to millions of low-income adults, and the Senate Finance Committee is considering a similar move. But there's a big catch. Concerns about how to pay for the health care bill are growing, and the Medicaid expansion alone is expected to cost more than $430 billion over the next 10 years. That has the nation's governors, who usually bear a share of Medicaid costs, very worried.
Governors agree that there cannot be an unfunded mandate. It cannot be passed on to the states to pick up the tab.
Jim Douglas is Vermont's Republican governor and chairman of the National Governors Association. He notes that most states are already having trouble meeting basic needs because of huge budget deficits.
We have to make sure that we don't expand a program that we can't afford to pay for over the long term.
And he says he's not reassured by proposals in Congress to have the federal government foot the entire bill to expand Medicaid, but only for the first 2 years. The governor's opposition comes on top of broader discontent over the cost of the health care bill. Lawmakers such as Maryland's Democratic Senator Ben Cardin have been shouted down by angry crowds this summer when they try to defend proposals to extend coverage to the poor.
And a lot of people who use the emergency rooms are using the emergency rooms because they have no other place to go. They then become part of the uncompensated care. They enter the hospital. They don't pay their bills. And then the hospital has to raise the rates on all of us.
But this
so
bill,
what we're trying to
no,
do
Senator,
is...
I'm
opponents
sorry.
Of the legislation say they don't trust the federal government to run the program efficiently and have vowed to defeat the bill. Homeless advocates say they hope the needs of their clients don't get lost in this larger debate. They say people will end up footing the bill for the homeless one way or the other. Pam Fessler, NPR News.
There are signs the U.S. economy is limping back, but millions of Americans who lost jobs in this recession remain out of work. The unemployment rate could hit 10% before the worst is over. During President Obama's first 100 days in office, NPR's David Greene was on the road talking to people who lost their jobs or were hit by the recession in other ways. We asked David to check in on some of the people he met to see how or if things have changed. Here's what he found.
As I made my way across 18 states last spring, I'd ask each person I interviewed if I could take their picture.
Can I get a photo of you outside with the boats? Would that be...
No! You're not going to take my picture.
I have to. We got to get you on our internet. Is that okay?
Look at me.
You're beautiful.
You're on drugs.
That is a voice that stayed with me. She's Faye Womack, 54 years old. I met her in Columbia, Kentucky, where she worked in a houseboat factory, but she'd been laid off. I called Faye back a few days ago. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you, David?
I'm well. Thanks for talking to me again.
Well, you're welcome.
Turns out Faye is still unemployed.
It don't bother me being out of work as bad as it did at first. At first, I thought, what am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do with all my time?
Well, have you ever been out of work for this long a period of time?
No. I've never been without a job this long, since I was 15.
And Faye had more bad news. Just days before I called, she lost her mother. It was a long illness. And actually, Faye was grateful for the extra time at home.
I saw her just about every day and talked to her 3 or 4 times a day. And it's just odd that I was laid off the same time that Mom passed away. And I just felt like it was meant to be that way.
She is ready to work again. Ready to get back into the factory, take orders, sew seat cushions like she used to. Just to be busy again. And make some money. She's been on unemployment, struggling to pay for health insurance. Now, whether she gets that job back depends on her friend and former boss.
My name is Jim Hadley. I'm the president and CEO of Majestic Yachts Incorporated. We have two vice presidents, Mitchell Hickenbotham and Bill Pageant. We are kind of like an old rock band. We've been together a long time, and hopefully we'll be together a whole lot longer.
That was February when Jim told me that his rock band once included Faye and some 24 other employees. When the recession took hold, though, the last thing people wanted to do was go buy a giant houseboat. And so Jim had to lay off everybody. It was just Jim and those two vice presidents doing a few contract jobs. When I called Jim back recently, he said they had a lonely few months in an empty factory.
The three of us worked on construction projects to help pay the light bill, the phone bill, and that sort of thing.
They hope things might start looking up. In fact, Jim's been working on a strategy. It's a smaller, cheaper houseboat, something that's more affordable than the boats they had been making. Jim's skeleton crew built one of these new boats and did a test drive a few weeks ago. The first new boat made at his factory to touch water in more than a year.
The mayor... The local media was here pretty much all day, and the hope that it's generated for the community to be able to bring jobs back to the community has just been tremendous.
To build this single boat, Jim rehired two of the employees he had laid off. He's hoping to make more calls.
If I get 4 or 5 orders, I'll bring every one of our 24 people back to work immediately.
That, of course, includes Faye. She and Jim talk just about every day. Faye said that if she is called back, her job could be different.
You know, I'll do whatever they tell me to do. I'll try whatever it is. And I'll let them tell me that I can't do it or whatever, but I'll try it anyway.
Faye Womack and Jim Hadley. Like so many Americans, waiting this recession out and eager for even a small sign that things are coming back. David Greene, NPR News.